Good morning. Thank you all for braving this somewhat inclement weather to come and share the Dharma today. Today we're going to be working on a koan. Koans are these seemingly paradoxical, strange tales of the sayings and doings of some of the ancient Zen masters. At least most of them are. Sometimes they're quotes from sutras and that sort of thing. But they are rather like puzzles. And the job of the student is to see the koan clearly, straight on. In order to do that, you have to put aside our preconceptions, thoughts, notions, attachments to self, other, and all those things that the mind tries to do to protect itself from what we call enlightenment. In each koan, the master demonstrates this clear seeing. And so it is our job to see as the master does, as they say, walk eyebrow to eyebrow with the master. And there are some in the curriculum that we have here at the Denver Zen Center for those who are working on koans. There's about 550 of them. So we just keep working along. In the end, there is nothing particularly mysterious or esoteric about koans. They are simply a form of practice. It's just something we do. And with each koan, we see not just the koans, but our lives a little more clearly, a little less obstructed, not so much filtered through the conscious mind. And to be able to see clearly and to live out of that clarity is what we call enlightenment. The koan we're going to work on this morning is from the Wu Men Guan. That's the first of the classical collections of koans that we deal with in our curriculum here. It was compiled sometime in the 11th century by Master Wu Men. And each koan consists of a main case, which is the story, and then a commentary by Wu Men, and then a verse, usually by Wu Men, but sometimes he cribs them from other sources. So this morning we'll deal with case number 31 in the Wu Men Guan. It's entitled, Zhao Zhou Investigates the Old Woman. The case reads, a monk of Zhao Zhou's asked an old woman the way to Mount Dai. The old woman said, go straight on. After the monk had taken a few steps, she remarked, he may look like a fine monk, but he too goes off like that. Later, another monk told Zhao Zhou about this, and Zhao Zhou said, hold on, I'll go and investigate the old woman thoroughly for you. The next day off he went and asked her the same question and got the same reply. He returned and announced to his assembly, I've investigated and seen through the old woman of Mount Dai for you. Wu Men's commentary. The old woman knew how to work out a strategy and win the victory while sitting in her tent. Yet she is not aware of the bandit stealing into the tent. Old Zhao Zhou is skillful enough to steal into the enemy's camp and threaten the fortress at the frontier. Still, he wasn't a real general. When you examine them closely, you find they both had their faults. Now tell me, what was Zhao Zhou's insight into the old woman? And then Wu Men's verse. The question is the same each time. The answer, too, is the same. Sand in the rice, thorns in the mud. Zhao Zhou came to his teacher, Nan Chuang, when he was about 17 years old. He stayed until Nan Chuang's death, when Zhao Zhou was in his 50s. After a period of mourning, he spent the next 20 years or so traveling the length and breadth of China, meeting various monks and masters. Finally, at the age of 80, he settled down to teach in a little run-down monastery in the city of Zhaozhou, from which he took his name. Zhaozhou, the city, was located on a main pilgrimage route to Mount Wutai. In Chinese, that would be Wutai Shan, a sacred mountain believed to be the abode of Manjushri, the bodhisattva of transcendent wisdom, Prajna. There are five peaks on the mountain, and a great many monasteries and hermitages were located there. So it's not surprising that a lot of monks came by asking the way of anyone they met. Not a lot of road signs in those days. A monk of Zhaozhou's asked an old woman the way to Mount Dai. As with all good Zen stories, this one starts with a question. Which way to Mount Tai? But this monk is not, or student, is not asking a famous Zen master, nor is it a famous Zen master asking a monk or a student. It's a monk stopping by a roadside tea stand and asking the old woman who runs it, which way to Mount Tai? Is this situation different from a mando, or a Zen dialogue, in a monastery, or shosan, Dharma exchange at a Zen center? If this monk were facing his teacher, Zhao Zhou, would he put the question differently? Would his inflection or the wording change? Would he even ask the question? Excuse me, teacher, but can you tell me how I can get to Mount Dai from here? I don't think so. You might try to impress the old man by saying, teacher, where is Mount Dai at this moment? You might get clobbered, but what the hey, you learn. The way to Mount Dai. Mountains have great significance in almost all religions. Moses and Mount Sinai. Yun Men and others speaking of Mount Sumeru. Just to the northwest of here, we have Blue Mountain, where Becky Wethington has built a zendo, and where we have a session every year. We speak of our Zen practice as climbing the mountain, seeing emptiness, and then coming down from the mountain. Re-entering the world, re-entering the marketplace with bliss bestowing hands, the practice of the bodhisattva. A monk of Zhaozhou's asked an old woman the way to Mount Tai. An old woman at a tea stand. Nobody special, we think. A monk might very well ask quite innocently for directions. The old woman said, go straight on. Now, at this center, we have heard a lot of stories about these tea ladies, so we have the advantage of this monk. Those who have worked on case number 28 in the Wu Men Guan know about the tea lady who overthrew Deshan with a devastatingly simple question. So if we hear, go straight on, we might be looking for a deeper meaning than, oh, just on down the road a piece. But it's easy to miss, to get caught up in our worldly pursuits, even when speaking to a renowned Zen master, much less the server at the local coffee house. So this monk, quite innocent, starts off. If this were a mando at Guanyin Monastery, and Zhao Zhou said, "Go straight on," how would this monk react? It's all about context. Years ago, I read about an experiment in problem solving. The volunteer subject was put in a room in which there was a tall, narrow tube standing upright on a table. At the bottom of the tube was a ping pong ball. The tube was just wide enough to accommodate the ball. There was also some wire, a couple of thin rods, some plastic tubing, and a bucket of water. The assignment was to get the ping pong ball out of the tube without actually touching the tube with your hands. The tube was fastened to the table, so you couldn't just upend it. Most of the subjects would fiddle with the rods and the wire, and then get the idea to pour water from the bucket into the tube. Of course, the ball floated to the top and was removed easily. But then the experiment was changed. Instead of a bucket on the table, the water was in a nice crystal pitcher sitting on a doily with some glasses on a side table. Nobody got it. So much of what we see, hear, and think depends on context. The monastery is one place. The road is another. This building, our temple, is one place. What about outside in the world? Is that another place? Robert Aitken Roshi warns of limiting our practice to the mat. If we do, our zazen just becomes an esoteric hobby that we use to impress our friends at cocktail parties. We have to expand our practice to include every aspect of our lives. Our practice must be as flexible as our changing circumstances. Whatever happens is grist for the Zen mill. Case number 4 in the Shoyoroku, the Book of Serenity, reads, "When the Buddha was walking with his disciples, he pointed to the ground with his hand and said, 'Here would be a good place to build a sanctuary.' Sakadevendra took a blade of grass and stuck it into the ground and said, 'The sanctuary is built.' The Buddha smiled. Wherever you are, there you are. Wherever you are, there is your temple, your practice, your enlightenment. Don't think that you can leave it behind. Let's see you try to abandon the universe. You ask, someone answers. Does it matter who? The old woman, Zhao Zhou, me, your teacher." After the monk had taken a few steps, she remarked, "He may look like a fine monk, but he too goes off like that." Suddenly the chain is yanked. You ask an ordinary question, you get what you think is an ordinary answer. You respond to that answer in a worldly, conventional way, and bam! Where have we seen this before? Case number 15 of the Wu Men Guan reads in part, "Dongshan came to study with Yun Men. Yun Men asked, 'Where have you come from?' Dongshan said, 'From Cha Tu.' Yun Men asked, 'What were you doing? Where were you during the summer training period?' Dongshan said, 'I was at Postzu Monastery in Hunan.' Yun Men asked, 'When did you leave there?' Dongshan said, 'On the 25th of August. Yun Men said, 'I spare you 60 blows.' 'Phooey, get out. I'm not going to waste my time on you.' 'He may look like a fine monk, that he too goes off like that. Later, another monk told Zhao Zhou about this. And Zhao Zhou said, "Hold on, I'll go and investigate that old woman thoroughly for you." Another monk. "Looks like word is getting around. Are the monks gossiping about this old woman?" Now, Zhao Zhou, even though he is pushing 100, is still investigating. He spent his life investigating. So now here is yet another interesting matter, something worth investigating. The next day, off he went and asked her the same question and got the same reply. He returned and announced to his assembly, "I've investigated and seen through the old woman of Mount Tai for you." Which way to Mount Tai? Go straight on. Same question, same reply. But then what happens? Does Zhao Zhou go off just like that? Does the old woman make that same follow-up remark? Zhao Zhou saw through the old woman, but did the old woman see through Zhao Zhou? What does it take to see clearly? Can one see clearly without being seen clearly? There are no one-way streets in our practice. To see clearly, you must be completely open, unconcerned, hiding nothing. He returned and announced to his assembly, "I've investigated and see the old woman of Mount Tai for you." Gee, that's nice of him. You've seen through the old woman. Okay, teacher, what did you see? He doesn't say. Of course, he doesn't say. If he had, there would be no koan. Zhao Zhou has seen, but now it's the monk's turn. And it's our turn. Wu Men's commentary. The old woman knew how to work out a strategy and win the victory while sitting in her tent. Yet she is not aware of the bandit stealing into her tent. Old Zhao Zhou is skillful enough to steal into the enemy's camp and threaten the fortress at the frontier. Still, he wasn't a real general. When you examine them closely, you find they both had their faults. Now tell me, what was Zhao Zhou's insight into the old woman? Setting up a strategy, sitting in the tent. There she sits by the side of the road, letting traveling monks come to her, a spider in the web. And Zhao Zhou is the spy, the infiltrator. Apparently his expedition was successful. A Zen version of James Bond. Sneak in, photograph the plans, sneak out, mission accomplished. Still, he wasn't a real general. When you examine them closely, you find they both had their faults. Now tell me, what was Zhao Zhou's insight into the old woman? There's no confrontation here, no Dharma combat. Is someone at fault? Should the old woman have recognized the master? Maybe she did, but is making no distinctions. Should the master have introduced himself, told her to quit messing with his monks' heads? Should he have invited her to come to the monastery and get some instruction? I have difficulty imagining Zhao Zhou doing any of those things, but maybe that's just me. In chemistry, there are certain materials that act as catalysts. A catalyst is a molecule that causes a chemical reaction to happen much more quickly, sometimes hundreds of times faster than would happen otherwise. How about this old woman? Is she a catalyst? What are other catalysts in our lives? What kind of events or situations do we run into? Situations which bring up awkward questions, even unanswerable ones, driving us to practice. Our life is a string of catalysts. Every koan is a catalyst. But the catalyst itself remains unchanged. How about that? Is this old woman a catalyst? Does she ever change? It's not a bad thing for the monks and the rest of us to run into that sort of thing. Keeps us on our toes. I bet the next time one of these monks goes by that tea stand, he will have something different to say. Woman's verse. The question is the same each time. The answer, too, is the same. Sand in the rice, thorns in the mud. Same question, same answer. Is that really possible? Is any breath, any moment the same as the last? If you are breathing Mu, is each one the same? If you are following the breath, is any breath the same as all the others? Sand in the rice, thorns in the mud, hidden threats, secret meanings. But as Dogen's friend said, nothing in the universe is hidden. The hiding, the secret, is only in our imperfect awareness. What is this sand? What are these thorns? What will you do when you encounter them? There's lots of sand and thorns in our lives, in our practice. It's not the job of the teacher or anyone else to smooth the way. It is the job of the teacher to help you find within yourself the wherewithal to deal with sands and thorns, the ups and downs, the joys and the sorrows. Each one of us must see the rice, the sand, the mud, the thorns, the old woman, Zhao Zhou, our practice. We must see it all ourselves for ourselves. Today I have a capping verse for you. When clearly we see and freely we walk, the sand is delicious and thorns are a comfort. Together with all beings, and at the same time, completely on our own, we realize the way.